I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. This fall, Century 21, the discount designer clothing chain, will open a new store in an old building in Philadelphia, the former Strawbridge and Clothier store at 8th and Market Streets. This will help to revitalize this neighborhood in Center City, Philadelphia, and the gallery at Market East. Downtown Philly is experiencing a boom of sorts, driven in parts by millennials and by boomers who have moved into the city. We'll be talking about that with our two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. But first, we begin with Alan Greenberger, Deputy Mayor for Economic Development and Director of Commerce for the City of Philadelphia. He joins us by telephone. And Alan Greenberger, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
So what does the Century 21 mean for this portion of Philadelphia, the Gallery and Market East?
Well, you know, as is common in any big retail environment, there needs to be anchor stores. And this is a real anchor store in a location that we've been interested in seeing reinvent itself now for a number of years. So this is a very big deal for the city.
And by anchor store, an anchor store that will bring people and then hopefully create other retailers in the area?
Right. The anchor does two things. It certainly just creates a big presence of a store that becomes attractive both for residents but also for visitors to the city. People like to shop when they visit places. But it also attracts other retailers, and that in some ways might even be the at least equal importance to the attraction to shoppers themselves, because it's a signal to other retailers that this is an environment that they want to be in.
Is the gallery in trouble?
No, it's not in trouble. I think it's simply looking to reposition itself. It's certainly looking with a lot of urging from us to think through how it can extend itself to the street more powerfully, which is, if there's been a knock on it over the last several decades, it's a very interior environment. I think it's a very good-looking environment, but its connections to the street are weak. And as things like Century 21, which will enable Preet, who is the landlord of the gallery, if this will enable them to attract other tenants, which will then enable them to do the kind of renovations that we have all talked about that start to push more of the environment out to the street. And that's going to enliven the street.
And it's an interesting part of Philadelphia because you go a couple of blocks north and south, and there is a kind of vibrancy to it, if I can say that.
Yeah.
But we're talking about Market Street, a little bit of Art Street, and also maybe spilling over into this also portion of Chestnut Street. And it doesn't seem to have quite the sense of revitalization that other really neighboring streets do have.
It hasn't. It's been a bit of a slow process, and some of that is because both developers and lessees, stores that lease properties, are following somebody's lead. But there has to be a lead somewhere, and this transaction with Century 21 is one of those kind of lead moments that starts to attract other people. So I think you're going to see the pace quicken. I think also what you're seeing is a lot of interest in the kind of the highest end retail core in the city over on the west side, let's say around Walnut Street, and that getting filled up, priced out, and other people are starting to look elsewhere. And so you're seeing the reemergence, for instance, of Chestnut Street on the east side. You're seeing redevelopment on the 1100 block. You're seeing more interesting retailing on the 1200 block. You're hearing about plans for the 1100 block of Market Street that go all the way back to Chestnut. It's all part of the same phenomenon.
And has Philadelphia recovered from the recession as you look across the city?
Well, the answer is we are recovering. There's no question about it. I don't think you ever want to declare complete victory because it's a bit of an elusive thing. But here are some numbers that sort of gives us some optimism. The last reported unemployment rate, 8%, is the lowest it's been in a very long time. It's still too high. There's little question about that. And it's still too high, much too high, in certain segments of the community. But 8% is an extraordinary low number compared to where we've been over the last several years. And the best part of the number is, you know, I won't get into the details of it, but the best part of it is that the numbers indicate that more Philadelphians are employed and that there are more jobs in the city than there have been for a very long time.
I'm looking at something that Paul Levy wrote for the Philadelphia Inquirer, of course, the president CEO of the Center City District.
Right.
And one of the things he said is that Philadelphia still lags behind the region and other U.S. cities in job creation, comparing Philadelphia to Washington, Boston, New York City as well. Do you see Philadelphia turning a corner on this? And then, of course, there are jobs, and then there are jobs.
Well, Paul's right that there's no question that some of the very dynamic cities in the United States, like the ones he mentioned, have experienced significant growth, and they all have for various reasons. Ours has been slower than theirs, and on the other hand, it's been faster than a lot of other American cities. So we're somewhere in the middle of that pack. The thing to do, though, is worry less about what some of these fast-growing cities are doing, and worry more about just what we're doing. And we see a real transformation happening in the city. I don't want to pretend that it's going to be explosive. Things in Philadelphia tend to be a little more slow moving, but it's definitely moving in the right direction, and it's actually moving at a faster pace than we've generally experienced.
Talking about Center City, are we seeing then, is it a combination of millennials and, if I can say, their parents who are moving into Center City, Philadelphia?
Well, there's no question about it. The growth in the millennial population, I'm looking at my notes, suggests, first of all, this is the largest city in the United States that has experienced the most growth in the millennial demographics. So we're seeing an awful lot of young people who want to be here. A lot of them are people who have come to Philadelphia to go to university. They've come from outside the region, and they're staying in significantly higher numbers than they were 5 and 7 years ago. In fact, the numbers specifically were 29%, I think, staying somewhere around 2004-05, and now 48% of them staying. So that's a very significant change. And you can attribute it to a lot of things, but certainly one of them is the ability or the belief that you can get jobs and the reality that you can get jobs, and a relatively low cost of living, particularly around real estate compared to other major cities.
And we're going to be talking about rentals in Philadelphia, but even comparing rentals in this city to other cities, it's still pretty much a bargain, is it, Alan?
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, if you start to compare the really extremes, you know, what does it cost to get, let's say, 1,000 square feet of apartment in Manhattan, or for that matter, in parts of Brooklyn, compared to here, the dramatic differences in price. And there's also still dramatic differences in price on buying property. There are still tremendous deals to be gotten in Philadelphia that are fairly close into the center.
Talking about these millennials, even college graduates staying in the city, and I remember years ago, 10, maybe even 20 years ago, doing shows about the brain drain in Philadelphia, the idea that students would come here, go to college, and then they would go elsewhere to start a family or to get a job. Are you saying, Alan, that that's really changing here in Philadelphia, or has changed?
It has changed significantly in several parts of the city, and just to give you an example, in the center, 75% of the residents who are 25 and older have a bachelor's degree. That's way in excess of national averages. Their average income is higher. I mean, and the conversation started around retail. Retailers are finally understanding this, and they're seeing that there is an audience, a real market, immediately around in and around the center that they did not see as clearly in the past.
We've been focusing on Center City, Philadelphia, but of course, looking at other neighborhoods in the city, they are not faring so well. The city has a high poverty rate. How do we reconcile this boom in the center with what's going on in the neighborhoods that really just surround Center City, Philadelphia?
Well, your point is exactly right. I mean, you can't ultimately have a healthy city as a whole if you have some parts doing extremely well and other parts not. And so there has to be, and we do pay a lot of attention, particularly to job growth and job availability in both poor neighborhoods, but specifically in the communities where people don't have as high an educational attainment. And it means that you have to really concentrate on the growth of businesses that are in a position to hire people with lower educational attainment, train them, give them skills, let them advance up in the system. And that's why the mayor had an executive order to do a manufacturing task force. Manufacturing is certainly one of the sectors where that should be possible. service industry, the hospitality businesses, a lot of pieces of the healthcare world, which is huge around here, have the kind of availability of work. But, you know, then you go to the next piece, which is, okay, if the jobs are there, the next question is, does enough of the population qualify for the jobs? And, you know, it's a struggle. It's a struggle in any city with poverty, and it's certainly a struggle here. And we can't leave those places behind. That won't work in the long run.
Well, and it seems in Philadelphia, like in a lot of cities, but I think because the school system is in such crisis, that all roads seem to lead to the schools in Philadelphia. And as we know, millennials, if they want to start a family, struggle with themselves about whether to stay in the city or whether to go to the suburbs to find what they consider to be a better education for their children. How do you keep them in the city?
Well, you're probably pinpointing the most critical one, which is the schools. But if you wanted to go for the big three, it's safety, schools, and jobs. The school situation is hugely important. I live that life myself with my own daughters, and I now have one of them in Philadelphia who I'm sure at some point will be making the same kind of decisions. So there's no simple answer to it. I mean, this is a 15-minute conversation.
Sure.
We need about a 3-day and 15-minute conversation to start tackling this one.
But what I hear from you, Alan, and we have done those long conversations about schools and certainly about schools and millennials, but as you look at the challenges facing the city, and we've been talking about jobs and development, it's safety, schools, and jobs. Those are the three biggies?
I think they are. I mean, you can start putting in all kinds of other ones about quality of life, the nature of your commercial corridors. There's all kinds of other things that are very important, but it seems to me that those three form the essential core of why people make decisions to be in a place.
And we began by talking about Century 21. Are there other big retailers that you know of that are eyeing Philadelphia?
Well, I think there's a renovation going on at 17th and Chestnut, and what used to be was, I guess, Bonwits at one point, and then Daffy's, and now Nordstrom Rack. I think that's another important one. And then there are a number of other both national retailers, Michael Kors, Uniqlo, that are setting up shop here as well. And I think these are the kind of folks, by the way, that are going to drive up the rent structure in Philadelphia. And the one of the consequences of that, which is a good one, is that other retailers, the more local ones who possibly can't compete in that kind of rental scene, are going to start looking elsewhere. And that's why, among other things, you see Chestnut Street east of Broad becoming more important.
On that note, Alan Greenberger, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
You're entirely welcome. Good to talk to you, Marty.
Nice to talk to you as well. Again, Deputy Mayor for Economic Development and Director of Commerce for the City of Philadelphia, talking about Century 21 opening its store in the fall here in Philadelphia, what that means for the gallery and the east part of Market Street there. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. In fact, we have two guests waiting in the wings, and we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
The Executive Doctorate of Business Administration at Temple University's Fox School of Business supports WHYY. This 3-year applied research-focused degree is designed to provide experienced business leaders the skills to address tomorrow's challenges. Executive DBA students receive faculty mentorship, online collaboration, and the Fox School's reputation for high-quality research. Temple University Fox School of Business. Discover the power of Fox. Learn more at fox.temple.edu/executive-dba.
Support for WHYY comes from the Philadelphia Speaker Series, presented by Widener University, offering its 2014-2015 season of diverse ideas and world perspectives. 7 engaging evenings at the Kimmel Center, with a lineup of celebrated personalities, including Alan Alda, Ken Burns, Senator Olympia Snowe, David McCullough, and Dan Rather. Information is available at philadelphiaspeakerseries.org. Sponsored by the Haverford Trust Company.
Supporting WHYY, Simpson Meadows, a retirement community in Downingtown, PA, in Chester County. Managed by Simpson Senior Services, a nonprofit with a long-standing tradition of care. Simpson Meadows provides personal care for senior adults, along with memory care, respite, and independent living. A specially designed personal care neighborhood staffed with licensed nurses provides assistance with daily tasks to help residents remain as independent as possible. More at simpsonmeadows.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. For decades, this city was hemorrhaging people who left for the suburbs and parts elsewhere. That's not so true anymore. In fact, Center City has been experiencing a population boom, including millennials, empty nesters, even young families. We were talking about this with Alan Greenberger, Deputy Mayor for Economic Development and Director of Commerce for the City of Philadelphia. We now have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Kevin Gillen is an economist, senior research consultant at the Phils Institute of Government at the University of Pennsylvania. He specializes in urban economics and real estate finance. Kevin, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. Also with us, Jared Bray. He's a reporter for Plan Philly, and that's a news website that covers issues around the built environment in this city. And Jared, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be here.
Anything you want to say in response, Kevin, to what Alan Greenberger was saying?
Well, as you alluded to, it's really this recovery in both in real estate and in the overall economy really is a tale of two cities. If you're in Center City and you touch Center City, you're doing pretty well, or you're certainly trending in the right direction. If you're in any of the outer neighborhoods, the recession is still with you, the housing bust is still with you, you're still waiting for the world to turn. That's not to say that the growth that we're having in and around Center City is not a good thing. It's a great thing. It's a tribute to the Center City District and the current administration that they've been able to encourage it. But it certainly is an unbalanced growth, mm-hmm. and we would like to see it more equitably distributed.
You're nodding, Jared.
I am. I'm not sure I have anything to add, okay. But yeah, that's exactly right. I think that, you know, when you see a lot of young people moving into the center of the city, that's a good thing for the young people who are moving in, but it doesn't necessarily do anything, at least in the immediate term, for people who are living outside of the core of the city.
And when we talk about Center City, Philadelphia, we probably should define our terms. I'm back at you, Kevin.
Well, core Center City is classically it's Pine to Vine. Nowadays, you could say, you know, it goes from Washington to Spring Garden and, of course, River to River.
And River to River, Schuylkill to the Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
We do want to talk about the rental boom in the city, and it's interesting to compare rentals in the city to other cities. Again, I'm looking back at you, Kevin, but is this a rental boom? Is the city experiencing a rental boom?
We are, and most other cities are.
Exactly.
And it has been occurring right when the housing bust actually began. 2007 was probably the peak of our housing market in terms of prices and sales volume. Since then, city house prices are down an average of about 19% citywide. During that same period, rents are actually up 10% during the same period, which is sharp rental growth, not only for during a recession, but sharp rental growth even compared to our past history.
Is that because people got burned by the financial crisis? I mean, it seems like there could be a number of things. One is that younger people might have so much college debt they can't even think of buying a house, for instance.
That's one of them. Or they're not qualifying because the credit is
tighter. It's harder to get a mortgage.
A lot of people lost their homes during the recession due to foreclosure, so they've had to rent. A number of people would like to buy, but again, they can't because credit's been tight. And then lastly, even those who would like to buy were sitting on their hands because if house prices are falling, you want to wait till they stabilize rather than end up upside down on a house.
What have you been experiencing in some of your reporting, Jared?
In my reporting, I do know that a lot of the new projects that are coming up in Center City are rental projects and not condominium projects. Sort of the condo market fell apart right around when I started reporting on this stuff, or a little before.
The condo market,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But I can just say for myself, as somebody who's as a young person in Philadelphia.
Exhibit A for our show today.
Right. Youngish person, I should say.
Yes. I
and a lot of people that I know aren't really dying to buy a house. And it's not because of any of the factors you just mentioned, but just because you know, we like to sort of bounce around from different neighborhood to neighborhood and sort of see sort of the variety of the city. I've lived in a bunch of different neighborhoods, and part of that, the freedom is part of why you don't want to buy a house right away.
Yeah. And tell us where you've lived, just out of curiosity.
I've lived in the Italian Market over at 30th and Poplar, up at 5th and Girard, and now I live down at 11th and Tasker.
And the data support what Jared is saying, actually, the average age of home ownership in the U.S., first-time homeowners, has risen since the recession.
Right. And is it because you wanted to check out these neighborhoods, or you saw you got a better deal? I mean, what took you from one neighborhood to the other?
It was I wanted to move from 30th and Poplar to the Italian Market because there was more going on down there. There was, it was a sort of more vibrant area. Then I moved up to 5th and Girard because there was a cheap house that was big, it had a big backyard. And then I moved back down to South Philly because I like South Philly. You know, it's a million different factors, but certainly access to food and being able to walk anywhere I want to go is the main one, you know.
And that's a good thing, isn't it, Kevin? I mean, the fact that Jared and others are they're trying out different neighborhoods. They're trying to figure out where they might want to live, but they haven't settled down yet.
Well, it's a testament to the variety of different flavors of neighborhoods that Philadelphia now has than it used to. That it's you know, it's attracting sort of people like Jared, who I guess want to sample the buffet of real estate that we have now.
But is that different, do you think? From generations past?
Yeah, I mean, historically, people got married much earlier. And, you know, once you got married, that was the typical event, which precipitated buying a home. And once you bought it, more or less, you stayed in it. Maybe you changed homes once in your life. Mm-hmm. But one of the major outcomes of the housing bust is what people are referring to is, I'm sure you heard the phrase, the new normal. And the general notion is that for many segments of the population, we're going to move towards a more European-style housing market. So the age of at which you buy your first home is higher. The first home you buy is smaller. You change homes fewer times over the course of your life. More people rent than own, historically. And so that's not clear that is going to be a long-term trend. That may still just be a cyclical response. This is, and once this recovery becomes more robust, we may revert back to our more historic norms. But in the short term, what Jarek is talking about anecdotally certainly does seem to hold up empirically.
But what's interesting is that, the idea of home ownership seemed to be such a sort of a core view of the American dream, which was to own a house. And we have taxes that encourage that kind of behavior. But it sounds like, at least temporarily, Kevin, we're in a different situation.
It's still very difficult to buy a home in this economy, in this town, if you are low income, if you're unemployed, if you're young and have lots of debt. And you're buying in a neighborhood where house prices are still volatile. The lenders just view that as still high risk. I think it's a great time to buy a home, actually, if you have the savings and you have a good credit rating and you have a decent job or income.
And you think you want to stay for a while.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which, not everybody wants to do that. I mean, it seems like one thing we learned from the mortgage crisis was that if, say, people lost their job but they had a house, they were sort of tied to a certain area. They couldn't go necessarily look someplace else because they had a mortgage that they had to take care of.
Yeah, or they owed more money on the house than what the house was actually worth, so they couldn't sell, without taking a big loss.
Jared, and I hate to make you being, our
resident millennial
here. I don't even know how old you are. But looking at other cities, and other cities apparently experiencing a lot of what Philadelphia is experiencing, which is people your age wanting to live, perhaps wanting to rent, move around different kinds of neighborhoods. What's attractive about Philadelphia?
What's attractive about it to me, and I guess I'm not going to speak for anybody else, and I'm an old millennial, if I'm a millennial at all.
How old are you, by the way?
Under 30 years old.
Okay,
so,
okay.
But what's attractive to me is that when I wake up in the morning and I walk out my door, I'm everywhere. I walked here this morning and I live down on Tasker, and that's a long walk by sort of the core center city standards, but it took me 45 minutes, and on the way here it was just a lovely experience. It's also May, so that helps. Being able to get where I need to go without being in a car is a huge thing. It really is.
Well, go ahead.
And a lot of the stuff that I was going to mention about some of the new developments in Center City is that there's, there's less and less parking being included in some of these new developments, which is not developers being sort of altruistic. It's that they're noticing that there's a market for people who don't need to have their cars in Center City.
And I assume you don't have a car.
I do have a car, but I'm a reporter, so I need to get around a little bit more.
I got you. But that is a trend, Kevin.
This what is notable about this recession is that typically during a recession, prices of things fall, assets, commodities, what have you. In this recession, energy costs actually spiked, which is a core commodity that everyone has to avail themselves of. And $4 a gallon gasoline, plus the cost of heating and cooling a home, has actually worked in the city's favor at the expense of the suburbs by promoting urban living with a smaller carbon footprint, if you will, in a more centrally located home where you don't need a car to get around.
And you can rent them or do car share, that kind of thing. That it's you don't actually need to have a car if you live in a city.
No, Philadelphia is unique. It's it's one of a handful of cities in the U.S. where you can feasibly live without a car.
And that's Kevin Gillen. He's an economist, senior research consultant at the Fells Institute of Government. That's at the University of Pennsylvania. Jared Bray, a reporter for Plan Philly, and that's a news website that covers issues around the built environment in Philadelphia. And we are talking about the built environment in Center City, Philadelphia. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We want to know your experience of living in the city. Also, send us an email, radiotimes at whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at whyy. Radio Times. Let me get Mary from Center City, Philadelphia, to join our conversation. And Mary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Thanks for bringing this up.
Sure.
I have to tell you, I'm a little annoyed because this whole conversation about real estate in Center City and the boom, I've lived in Center City with my husband for 30 years now. We own a home. I have a small business. He has a business and a business partner. We do not enjoy a 10-year tax abatement. There's homes being built around us and in old pockets of the city that are selling for anywhere from $800,000 to $2 million, and those folks are enjoying a 10-year tax abatement while the rest of us are enjoying tax increases. When those who have been in the city and have supported this city so long for so many years. And then there's another issue with taxes.
Well, you know, Mary, let me take that one only because it's a good one, and I know that both of our guests want to talk about that. Let me toss that first to you, Kevin Gillen. She's right, isn't she?
Well, let me ask this. Have you considered making any improvements to your home?
Have you, Mary?
We've made improvements to our home.
Did you apply for an abatement?
My husband, pardon me?
Did you apply for an abatement?
That was 7 years ago.
You would have qualified. The abatement's been around since 2000. Anyone who makes improvements can get one by right. You just fill out a form.
10-year tax abatement?
Yes. Anyone who improves their home and can produce a building permit automatically qualifies for an abatement. There's just a form you have to fill out at the Office of Property Assessment. That's it.
You didn't know that, Mary?
Not 7 years ago when we did the
yes,
renovation.
Yes, since
not,
2000.
I mean, on what amount?
Any amount.
On a renovation amount or the total amount?
No, whatever amount you spend on the renovation that improves the value of your home, you do not get taxed on for 10 years.
Well, but
I appreciate that.
Right.
But that's like 7,000 compared to 700,000.
Because she said she lived here, and yes, she did some improvements. But what she's talking about is the construction.
Well, sure.
Boom.
I mean, obviously, if for new construction, the entire structure qualifies as an improvement, so the abatement is bigger. But again, anyone can get an abatement if they're willing to invest in their home, or if you want to buy a new home, you can get an abatement. Mm. But even if you don't, and I understand the disparity in the different tax levels, but again, without that abatement, we would not have gotten most of the new construction. We got most of the new residents, and they do add to our tax base and, you know, support the city economically so that you're not as taxed as heavily as you would be otherwise because we have more people to shoulder the burden, if you will.
Mayor, I appreciate the call. Jared, I know you want to add something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask a question of Kevin. Is that, you know, I know that sometimes when you have these abatements or policies that are sort of subsidizing certain types of development, you do it because you want to make things happen that wouldn't happen without the subsidy. So with something like a by-right subsidy, like a 10-year abatement, how do we know that this is actually causing the development we want it to cause and not just sort of a windfall to people who are
a good
are
question.
Developing.
First of all, as most like most economists, I don't like tax breaks that are targeted to specific industries or people because they create an unfair playing field. In this case, as I like to point out, Philadelphia has exceptionally high construction costs but very low rents and prices. New York construction costs, Baltimore rents and prices. You're asking if the development is going to happen anyway, why subsidize it? I'll just give you one very quick statistic. The abatement was put in place in 2000. In the 1990s, development in the suburbs far exceeded that of the city. Since 2000, development in Philadelphia has tripled, while development in the suburbs has actually relatively fallen compared to the city. If that's not the abatement at work, I don't know what other numbers I can produce to convince you otherwise.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. But what we hear is this is a sore subject, and it's interesting that Mary didn't know that she qualified. I'm just putting that out there.
I encountered this. I joke that the abatement is a good policy with bad marketing. I can't tell you. I speak to a lot of neighborhood groups on development trends in their neighborhood, and I can't tell you how many people I've met that think the abatement is something that you can only get if you're a Center City millionaire condo owner or it's a subsidy for rich developers. The abatement is available to anyone who can produce a building permit and is current on their property taxes. If you can make improvements to your house, you can get an abatement.
But it sounds like you were wondering, Jared, if this is sort of a point of contention or even a sore point.
Well, I know it's a point of contention. I come out as a reporter wanting to be able to actually measure the impacts of the policy. And you do as well, obviously, and you're giving me statistics that say it's been working. But there's obviously a cost to it as well. And like we talked about earlier, but the school's struggling, it's hard for people to hear that people who are building these luxury rentals in Center City are getting a tax break.
First of all, I'd point out that the Councilman Good, as you know, has introduced a bill that would basically cut the abatement in half and give it to the school district. Given current building activity levels in the city, and they are trending up, but they're still relatively low, if Mr. Good's bill was passed, we estimated it would produce about an additional $2 to $3 million a year for the school district. The school district has a $300 million plus deficit, so that doesn't even begin to put a dent in it. So if you're in favor of that bill, it's because you just don't like new development, not because you think it's going to do anything for the school district. Moreover, we found out that, remember, when people look at the abatement and they see only the debit side of the ledger, it's some giveaway. What they don't realize is that new development and new residents have a credit side of the ledger. They move in, they buy the home, they pay the transfer tax. The developer builds the home, he has to pay his contractor's wage taxes. He pays business taxes. New residents pay sales taxes. They also pay wage taxes. We estimated that in the case of new residents who buy new construction, there's a $2 cash-on-cash return for the abatement. In other words, for every $1 in property taxes that are abated, the city collects $2 back in other revenue sources.
But at the same time, you said you don't really like the idea of kind of specialized tax breaks.
If Philadelphia's construction costs were in line with the national average, there would be no need for the abatement. In my opinion, on it would be commensurate with that. But until we're willing to address that very thorny issue, the abatement acts as a Band-Aid to help, or I should say a bridge to help cover the gap between our high cost of development and our relatively low prices and rents.
Is that something you've looked at, Jared?
In terms of other cities with what the markets are in other cities? No, not really. The question for me is sort of like, if the market is supporting now sort of these luxury new developments, and that's what's able to be take advantage, there aren't a lot of developers building sort of housing that goes to other segments of the population.
Right.
So people are seeing sort of all of the sort of benefits of this particular policy going to the people who are moving into the new places that are being built, which are built for people of a higher income bracket.
That's true. As we pointed out earlier in the conversation, the story of this recovery is really a tale of two cities. We are not seeing new affordable housing being built in low-income neighborhoods.
That because it's not affordable for the builders?
Well, right. I mean, there's not market rate. You need subsidies to build low-income housing in Philadelphia by and large. I agree with that analysis, but I draw a different conclusion. To me, that's not an argument for getting rid of the abatement. It's an argument for perhaps extending it to maybe 15 or 20 years if you build low-income housing in quote-unquote distressed neighborhoods or affordable workforce housing.
We're almost up on a break here, but Jared, I talked briefly with Alan Greenberger about schools, the idea that if millennials and young people are moving to the city, there's that point at which you decide, do you stay in the city if you have children or do you go somewhere else? Is that still a live issue from the stories that you've done?
Absolutely. I mean, even just in the statistics, if it's millennials and empty nesters, who that is not the people that are having kids in the middle, I'm not sure what I have to add to that in terms of personal experience, but yeah, that's absolutely a problem. Is that education is the number one thing that people, especially if the economy is going to be based on sort of people who is going to have job opportunities for people of a very high income level, or a very high education level rather. If the city is struggling to do an adequate job of providing a basic education, that's kind of an insane equation.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Jared Bray, a reporter for Plan Philly. Also with us, Kevin Gillen, an economist, senior research consultant at the Fells Institute of Government. That's at the University of Pennsylvania. We are talking about Philadelphia. We're talking about tax abatement, development, redevelopment. Taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Terry Gross. Often when I'm interviewing people on Fresh Air, they give me a different way of looking at the world.
We all thought our bike was cold in the rain, that our fish was lonely in a fishbowl, that a leaf would be afraid of heights when it fell. It's just the way we looked at things.
Join us for new ways of looking at things on Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
The latest healthcare developments.
How what happens in Washington affects you.
How world events affect us all.
The news continues throughout your day. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. We are your co-hosts for Here and Now. Breaking news, thoughtful analysis, surprising interviews in the middle of your day.
With voices from all across the country so you won't miss a thing.
That's Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We've been talking about the real estate boom, such as it is in Center City, Philadelphia. Century 21, the discount designer retailer, is opening a store at 8th and Market in the fall. The city is also experiencing a trend familiar to other cities, an increase in the number of people who want to rent and not buy. Also, many young people either staying or moving into the city, boomers as well, and even young families. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And again, our guests are Jared Bray, a reporter for Plan Philly, and Kevin Gillen is with the Fells Institute of Government at the University of Pennsylvania. Let me swoop back and actually go back to you, Jared. We were talking earlier with Alan Greenberger about Century 21 coming into Philadelphia. I'd be just curious about your comments about that.
I'm not sure what my comments about Century 21 are because fashion doesn't necessarily excite me personally, but the whole East Market corridor is sort of interesting because it was built, as Alan said, as sort of a suburban mall in the middle of the city. And on the inside, it is really vibrant. But when you walk from 11th to 8th Street, which is sort of it's a three block radius, there's six entrances. So at the corners of the streets, you can go into the buildings. Right. And then there's these just windows that have nothing in them. There's the window displays with nothing in them, and you're basically at this blank wall. So one of the things that's nice about being in the city, obviously, is that there's lots of variety going on everywhere where you walk. So if they wanted to open up sort of the sides of the building to the sidewalk, that would be a huge improvement.
Do you agree? I mean, something like that, do you think that would help to revitalize and bring people there, making the gallery more accessible, Kevin?
Well, as an economist, I have no sense of the aesthetic. I leave that to experts. But as an economist, I can tell you the more people that we have on the streets, the more better.
But even as an economist, I mean, there are things that draw people to certain areas, and oftentimes it is architecture or accessibility.
Well, the primary appeal of cities is that they have sufficient density so as to promote walkability.
Right.
And, so having that street life is something that is one of the primary reasons that people want to be in cities.
We have a tweet from John. Can we discuss the significance of a land bank, the promise and pitfalls of execution, timeline, et cetera? Can I toss that back to you, Kevin?
Sure. Just to sort of frame the issue is, for those of your listeners who don't know, Philadelphia has a serious vacant land problem. We're a city of over a half million parcels. 40,000 of those parcels are vacant. Of those 40,000 parcels, approximately 10,000 are actually owned by the city, but they're scattered across different city agencies. And the land bank will give the city authority to not only have one-stop shopping in terms of city-owned parcels, but actually give them the authority to take vacant parcels that have back taxes owed on them and assemble them into larger parcels, which creates value because it saves developers time and money that they don't have to assemble the parcels themselves. They don't have to run around to different agencies begging them to sell them the land.
A good thing, then.
Yes. We are the largest city in the U.S. to implement a land bank, but we have not done it in as probably straightforward or transparent a way as other cities have. For the new land bank to actually be able to take the parcels, assemble them, and auction them off, they don't have unilateral authority to do that. There are several hurdles along the way, if you will, where council members or other officials can intervene.
The councilmanic district.
To stop that. So
I
think the land bank is a good step forward. I would like to say it's a great step forward. But, I think that time will tell whether or not these hurdles really are just obstacles or whether they're just something we have to clear to promote the disposition of and repositioning of our vacant land.
Jed, I'm curious about, parts of the city that look like they're growing and developing. I have to say, years and years ago, before I had this job, I was a case manager, and I, worked in what was then a poor neighborhood, mm-hmm. Fishtown. And if you go there today, it's
right.
sort of almost unrecognizable.
Right.
What parts of the city do you see some I guess, signs of either birth or rebirth.
I mean, obviously the whole area surrounding Fishtown and north, you know, even into Frankfort a little bit, Port Richmond, and all the Kensingtons, you know, east, south, old and new, are experiencing a lot of development. Also down at Pensport, I think Pensport had one of the highest rates of new building permits last year.
In South Philly.
In South Philly, which is sort of the easternmost part of South Philly. So there's stuff going on all over.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've read about zoning policy a lot, and one of the things that I've been noticing is that developers are saying that in places like Fishtown, you know, along the Frankfort Avenue corridor there, that could be a vibrant commercial corridor, but the zoning allows sort of residential development by right in certain areas of it. There's some parcels that are zoned for commercial use. There's some that are zoned for residential use. But what they want to see is that whole thing be zoned so that if somebody wants to build a new building there, they don't have to get variances to put in sort of a little boutique on the first floor, a coffee shop or whatever it is, so that they can add more vibrant street life, which then, you know, sort of increases the value of the neighborhood.
I mean, zoning defines so much of what happens in this city or any community.
I'll share one fun little anecdote for you. I work a lot with the property data for the city, and we were examining the value of the city-owned parcels of for the Redevelopment Authority. And one of the things that we found that we thought for sure influenced the value of a parcel is what it's zoned as. I mean, what you can build on a parcel, you think would determine what you're willing to pay for it. We found that there was zero correlation between land prices in Philly and what they were zoned as.
Wow.
The reason being is because very rarely do developers buy parcels and then develop them to what they're originally zoned as. They always go for a variance. So what it's zoned as now just means nothing to them because they're going to try and change it.
Right.
So I like to joke that Philadelphia doesn't really have a zoning code. It has zoning suggestions.
Right.
Yes, right,
that's exactly right. Yeah. No, I mean, when they rewrote the zoning code a couple of years ago, one of the main intentions was to decrease the number of cases at the ZBA, the zoning board, you know, which allows you to get your variances.
Right.
But that hasn't really happened. There's still a huge caseload at the zoning board, which means that the city's map is sort of either incorrect or that people don't take it seriously.
I thought something was wrong with my computer when I couldn't find a correlation. I was like, how can that be? That's in defiance of the laws of land economics.
That's interesting. Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Teresa from Center City, Philadelphia, joining us on Radio Times. Teresa, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I moved from New York City to Philadelphia a few years ago, and I love the city I own, and I would not move back to New York City. But one of the things that your guests were saying is that this is a really walkable city, and there's, you know, mass transportation available to not have a car. But the truth is I constantly end up using the car because the mass transportation is not as convenient as maybe it should be. The buses don't, you know, they run every half an hour or 20 minutes. The connections are not very well thought out. So I was wondering what the city is doing to improve the transportation in this, to sustain the growing population and the development boom.
And Teresa, where do you live in? I mean, not the actual address, but what part of Center City do you live in?
In Washington Square West.
In Washington Square? You're talking
for
about...
For example, if I want to go to the Spookle, for example, or to the museum area, there are buses, but I would have to wait half an hour for the bus to come. I also work in the suburbs, but I have to drive all the time because I take the subta, the train, and there's a bus that comes to my workplace every hour. So the whole commute would take 3 hours.
Yeah, I hear you. And we don't have a representative of SEPTA here to answer your question, but I'm curious, Jared, whether what Teresa's talking about is something that others who have moved to the city and like it are struggling with as well.
I mean, people have mixed feelings about SEPTA and the infrastructure, the transportation infrastructure we have here. But one of the things you're seeing is that, like I said before, with new developments having less parking available there, there's people building near transit stations so that you don't have to make the infrastructure more convenient to the developments, but to make the developments around the infrastructure. It's like, you know, Carl Dreinoff has a new building that just opened last week at the corner of Broad and South, which is right next to, you know, the subway station there.
Right. I mean, it's hard to build out a transportation system, isn't it?
And expensive. Well, she mentioned she's been here 2 years. If she thinks there's problems with the public transportation now, she should have been here 10 or 20 years ago. Believe me, she'd be grateful for what we have.
But things are better. But here, I mean, she's a New Yorker who moved to Philadelphia, and there's You know, she's not alone in that.
Right.
No. But you notice that, as Jared pointed out, the pattern of development during the recent boom has been along major public transportation lines. I mean, you know, up the Delaware following the Market Frankford line, south along Broad Street.
Right,
you
know. Right.
Let me get Jeff from Medford to join us on Radio Times. Jeff, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
We live in Medford, but we were thinking of moving into Center City, and we are still thinking about it, my wife and I. But we don't have any kids. They're all grown and gone. So, but we never would have moved into Philly when we had school-age kids. And if we wouldn't before, we definitely wouldn't now. It seems like that's the biggest issue in Philadelphia. Families just won't stay there with the kind of schools you guys have.
Well, I mean, some families do stay, Jeff, it should be said, and some families obviously do leave as well. Kevin?
Families with non-school-age kids, we've actually seen an increase in Center City. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, you never would have seen the number of strollers on, you know, the streets of Center City that you see now. You go to Rittenhouse Square on a Saturday morning 10 years ago, you know, it was people doing the Walk of Shame, and now it looks like a giant daycare center with all the kids that are there. So we are attracting young households. It's when the kids become of school age that you're right, we see them moving out.
But I mean, only because we've done shows about it, there are people, young people with kids who are trying to hold on to the city. Go ahead.
And not only are there young people with kids who choose to stay here, but there's, you know, the choice to be able to leave and buy a house in the suburbs, that's a certain privilege. You know, there are plenty of people, families in the city who we can't say they won't stay here because they're going to stay here. This is where they live. You know, they don't have the means to just pack up and move somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You know,
Jeff, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call us as well. And again, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about development or redevelopment in Center City, Philadelphia. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. We had a question from Bernice from Center City. Do they know what is going to happen to the huge Kmart that closed on Market Street? And we don't have Alan Greenberger with us, but we do have Jared Bray. Go ahead, Jared.
I don't know what's going to happen because they haven't said, but they have said that that's going to be vacated in the next few months, and they're going to split up that big Kmart parcel into separate areas. So they're going to have multiple retailers come in there rather than have just one sort of big anchor tenant in there. But they won't say how many spaces or who's going to come in.
Which maybe makes sense. And it's interesting. I don't know, Kevin, if you've looked at malls in the suburbs, but sometimes you go to some of these malls and you see a lot of empties. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't look necessarily like malls are sort of thriving places.
Well, yeah, part of this is due to design that's become very dated, the ones that were built, the older ones in the 60s and 70s. People now want more natural light. They want more open and an airiness feeling. And especially a lot of the younger generations, they actually like the street of the city. There's just a more authentic feel to it as opposed to the sort of the synthetic environment of a shopping mall.
Do you go to shopping malls, Jared?
I don't. I mean, I'm not, you know, I have a moral obligation or moral objection to it, but right. I don't know. I mean, I do want to be on the street whenever I can.
Kevin, you had talked about Europe and whether Americans are becoming more like Europeans when it comes to things like rental, and whether this is just a blip or not, or whether this is a trend. And what do you make of that? Is it just too soon to know?
Yeah, we don't know if this is cyclical or structural. You know, because of the housing downturn and the Great Recession, and which has hit you know, young millennials the hardest, recent college grads, they also have a lot of debt on top of that. They can't, you know, the average age of the first, the age at which you become a home buyer in the U.S., first time home buyer, has risen since the recession. The home ownership rate has declined. The turnover rate at which people move from one home to another has also declined. They're changing homes at a much slower rate than they used to. There is more urban living going on. There's been cities actually held their house prices in cities actually held their value better during this downturn than in the far flung suburbs. Again, going back to the energy cost issue. So these are all things that are consistent with more European style of living than the traditional American style. Now, you know, once a true economic recovery takes hold and a true housing recovery that is sustainable takes hold, if we'll see that trend reverse itself or it actually is something that is of a longer-term cultural shift, remains to be seen.
Do you like the mortgage deduction, which in certain ways creates an unlevel playing field, the idea that you get all these tax breaks if you buy versus if you rent?
It does. We know that there are social and economic benefits to homeownership. You know, you're more rooted in your community. You take care of your home better. You feel more as more of a stakeholder in the community and the town in which you live. You pay more attention to the fiscal operation of your city or your town, being a stakeholder in the town. At the same time, we also know that the mortgage tax deduction promotes overconsumption of housing. You buy more housing home than you would because you're getting that tax break. We also know that it's fairly regressive because in order to take advantage of it, you have to itemize your taxes, and low-income people typically don't do that. So there's some pluses and minuses to the mortgage interest deduction.
Jared, do you see then cities having a bigger allure? And we've been talking about Philadelphia, but there, you know, there are small cities in this area. Mm-hmm. Lambertville in New Jersey, for instance, mm-hmm. is a small – doesn't look like a city, but it apparently is a city.
Right.
Maybe cities of 30, 40, 50,000, something like that. Do you see that as an allure?
Yeah, I'm sure it's an allure to certain people. You know, Lambertville is right across the river from New Hope,
yes.
Right? Yeah, and it's sort of a quaint, you know, older looking place. It's on a river. It's, you know, it's pretty nice looking. And that's going to be attractive to certain people. But there's nothing that's going to be as attractive as sort of the major metropolises that are going to be most attractive to certain young people.
You know, Marty, I mentioned earlier that the house values in the cities actually held their value better than in the suburbs.
Right.
But even in the suburbs, homes that were within a walkable town center or were walkable to transit held their value mm-hmm. better than the homes that were in, you know, more auto-oriented communities.
So, I mean, is the suburbs losing its allure, do you think?
Well, if energy costs remain high, then that certainly promotes it. But I think there's also a cultural shift, you know, towards greater walkability and greater diversity, as well as, you know, call it a greater environmental consciousness, if you will, where people want a smaller carbon footprint in the lifestyle that is attended with that.
Yeah. I mean, you see it that way, the idea of sort of having that smaller carbon footprint, that's a benefit?
Yeah, and I think that's a benefit. I think a lot of people think about that very, very seriously. A lot of people just see it as something that's like an added benefit of the lifestyle they already, you know, choose to have.
Right. And they just get to do it in a
right.
place where
and
they
then,
want to
and then
be.
And they can feel better about themselves because they're consuming less energy.
Well, know. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
Well, we have to end on that note. My thanks to both of you. Jared Bray, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Reporter for Plan Philly. And Kevin Gillen, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
He's an economist, senior research consultant at the Fells Institute of Government. That's at the University of Pennsylvania. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. In fact, we have posted photos of our guests on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.